Next speaker this afternoon is my assistant pastor, Benton Williams. Ben?
God bless you.
Well, I'm always thankful when I get placed somewhere near the beginning of the speakers, because when we're given a theme to speak upon, I'm always worried that somebody's going to preach my sermon for me. And I was a bit worried on that last one, but I think maybe I'll still have something to add here. On the subject of coming out of Babylon, there are many things that can be said. As was mentioned earlier, the word Babylon does mean confusion. And if you look the word up in your Hebrew concordance or dictionary, you'll find that it means confusion. And it means man's confusion. And it's a term that's been used in various different ways. We use it mostly today to represent confusion in the world system. Now, in Genesis 10 and 11, we read about the beginning of a kingdom or a place or location that actually existed on earth that had the name Babylon, or Babel, as it is would be in Hebrew. But the name was not destined to die there. It carried on, and we still use it, and it's still applied to this system of confusion that we struggle in today, struggle to come out of. The physical kingdom of Babel was, of course, ruled by a man, at least initially, by a man named Nimrod. He's the one that built it. But there's much more to this name, Babylon, than just that location. Scripturally, Babylon represents much that we have to understand and study about today. The foundation for the term and the foundation for the actual understanding of this was begun way back in Genesis. The foundation for confusion. It began in Genesis 3. Now, this is where man began to make the decision that he could depend upon his own self, his own reasoning, and his own self-made rules to prepare and discover his own destiny, as it were. Well, this is the beginning of confusion for man, and as I said, it is man's confusion. It's not God's confusion. So it began way back there, and then it began to manifest itself later by more of these people who got together under this man named Nimrod, who all got together on this idea of governing themselves and making their own rules instead of listening to God and his rules. It began in the Garden of Eden, and it's carried down through the centuries. And ever since this time, it's been a religious and a political factor amongst us in this world. The political institutions as well as the religious institutions through all these centuries has been plagued and controlled by this confusion called Babylon. Now, Babylon is, as I said, both religious and political, and possibly more than that. But it's at least, we know that much, it's at least political and religious. Confusion of the masses is the key to allowing Babylon to exist. For instance, to have a leader or a controlling thing to rule Babylon, it's necessary that the masses of the people must be confused. So part of the plan to rule people is to first confuse them. The people who are confused then are not so hard to control. Now, there's a very simple and a foolproof method to take power over and confuse a people or a society or a nation. Those rules are laid out here for you right in the Bible. It says there in Genesis 3 how to do it. And the way you do it is this. You tell them that they are their own gods, that they are God themselves. And people generally like to hear that sort of thing. So that's not too hard. You don't have to be too good a salesman to get that across. That's one of the things that you do if you want to control people. You teach them that they are their own gods. Secondly, you teach them that they can make up their own rules. And that their rules are as good as anybody else's rules, including our Father in Heaven, God. And you say, well, His rules are no better than yours. In fact, eventually, if you want to control people, eventually you hope that they give up this silly idea of a God in heaven. Ideologically, this plan or this system is called humanism. Politically, it's called democracy, and religiously, unfortunately, it's sometimes called Christianity by fools. So this is the kind of confusion that we're saddled with as long as Babylon flourishes in this earth, and it has been doing quite well. But we read in Revelation 18 that Babylon will fall. In fact, some of us believe that it is now in the process of falling, or perhaps I could say it's in the process of getting ready to fall, however you want to say that. But I believe Babylon is falling, and what could be more pleasing than that? And really, what could be more logical than Babylon to fall? As I said earlier, Babylon is built on a system of confusion. Just as a house that's built without a plan, or a city that's built without a blueprint, Babylon also was built on confusion. It's built on the confusion of the people. Now, when Babylon falls, we, perhaps some of us who sit in this room today, may see it. It may be in our day. Offhand, I'm not sure whether that would be good for you and I or bad for you and I. It may be very disturbing. It may be very dangerous times. I don't know. But personally, I tend to believe that it's going to be a very pleasing sight to see the smoke rising from destroyed Babylon. Modern-day Babylon is a world-controlling combine, in my estimation, headed up by some people who are named in the Bible. We actually have them designated. We don't have their personal name, but we do have a title for them in Revelation 18 and starting in verse 20. It says, "Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, Thus with great violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. And the voice of harpers and musicians and of pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee. And no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee." It's kind of strange that they should mention here these craftsmen, because, you know, we see in Babylon today, we see the result of many skilled craftsmen. And I'm using the term loosely, because craftsmen can be anything from a silversmith to an architect to various different things. But you see, these things sometimes are worshipped by people more than God. But even in Babylon, there are skills that sometimes are hard to let go of when you think in terms of coming out of Babylon. You see beautiful things and you think, well, that's good. That can't be bad. But that's not always the case. "And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee." And here comes this curious statement. "For thy merchants were the great men of the earth. For by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth." Now there's the title of those who rule or control Babylon. They're called merchants. merchants. Going back to verse 9, it says, "And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and live deliciously with her," in other words, with Babylon, "shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning." These merchants and the kings of the earth are tied into Babylon. Apparently, the kings affiliate themselves with Babylon through the merchants. And the kings find themselves in need of Babylon to support their kingdom or their Babylonish despotism or whatever they are a part of. And it says that standing afar off for fear of her torment, they're saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come, and the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore." No man buyeth their merchandise anymore. That must be tantamount to the fall of Babylon. When no man buys her merchandise anymore, that must be the fall of Babylon. Now, who's buying Babylon's merchandise? Perhaps you might ask, what is Babylon's merchandise? It goes on down to name much of the merchandise. Of course, this is a physical type merchandise, which we can apply spiritually. But you know, today what Babylon's greatest merchandise is that men buy, it's called license. Permission. How does Babylon control the world? Let's take it down a little bit closer. How does Babylon control the United States? How does Babylon control New Mexico? How does Babylon control mountain air? Well, it's by license. You see, we think in terms of merchandise as goods and money, but you know, these merchants of the world don't need any more money, do they? Aren't they rich enough already? Don't they have more money than they can manage already? Don't they have to hire people to take care of their bank books for them? You know, when I get so rich that I can't control my own bank book, I'm going to have enough. That'll be enough for me. Well, they've been there for years and beyond. So what do they want? They don't need money anymore. So what do they want? Well, they want control. They want power. How do they get power once they have all the money in control? They get power by doling out license. In other words, they give you their permission. Don't we have to have permission to build a house? Don't we have to have permission to get married? Don't we have to buy a license for these things? Don't we have to have permission to sell, to set up a business and sell? Don't we have to have permission to have children and to teach them? Don't we have to have permission to die? You see, who can do war with this beast? Who can war with this beast? No one. Because she has control of the earth right now, this beast, and of course, who rides the beast? The great city Babylon. She's granting permission. And you see, this permission is spoken of in chapter 13, verse 17. "And that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." Well, there's been a lot of talk about what that may mean. But the bottom line is, that's license. That's a license to buy, sell, function, live, die, the whole thing. Can't buy or sell without license. Now, that's one part, and of course, I could go on to explain more and more about that if I'd prepared more. Of course, I don't have time right now, but let's go on and talk about more things here to identify Babylon. Because you see, it's important to know how to identify Babylon, because we're at odds with Babylon. It does two things for us if we can identify it. First of all, it helps us, if we can identify what Babylon's doing, it gives us a clue as to what we should not be doing, right? Secondly, if we can identify Babylon, then we know which direction to head. If Babylon's going that way, we go that way. And when God says, come out of Babylon, then it's pretty important that we identify it. Chapter 17, starting in verse 1. And there came out one of the seven angels which had the seven veils and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will shew you the judgment of the great whore that setteth upon many waters. Now, sitting on many waters suggests that this great whore has control over many people. The many waters means many people and nations. With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So there's an intoxicating influence to whatever is involved here. It actually turns your head, so to speak. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornications. One of the things that you notice about Babylon here, and the way that this woman is described, is she is flagrantly open with her wickedness. She's not even ashamed of it, see? And that's the way Babylon is. And Babylon goes on to boast. It says, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, drunk with power. Drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Verse 18 at the end of the chapter says this, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Babylon reigns over the kings of the earth. How do you reign over kings? How do you control kings? You control kings with money. I don't remember reading about any kings other than our Lord Jesus Christ that you couldn't control with money. He's the only true king that we have to look to. Merchants, down through the centuries, and the law of merchants are more powerful than kings. I just returned from a wonderful visit to England, and one of the things that I noticed there and learned was that I visited the Tower of London, and I witnessed a building there called the White Tower that was erected by William the Conqueror. And you know, when William the Conqueror in 1066, the Norman Conqueror, came in and took over all of England, there was one place that that man didn't conquer, and that was called the City of London. Now, the City of London is not London. London is the whole area there that covers miles and miles and miles. The City of London is a one mile square city in the midst of all that, right down next to the River Thames, in the area where this Tower of London is built. This tower was erected there in that city, and that was the only thing that was erected or taken into that city by William the Conqueror. Why didn't William the Conqueror conquer London? Why was London more powerful than William the Conqueror? It sure wasn't their armies, but it was something. And I believe that what London had that William the Conqueror needed was merchants. London was a world trade center at that time, and the great bankers of the earth lived in London, and their center was in the City of London. William the Conqueror came in there, and he says, well, look, I'll make a deal with you. I won't conquer you if you'll do business with me, and we'll get along all right. Who came out on the top of that? The merchants did. The same merchants that rule the earth today. The great merchants of our day are the international bankers. There are more American banks in the city of London, that one little 1 mile square city of London, than there are in, I believe it's Manhattan and perhaps all of New York, I'm not sure. But why do so many American banks locate there? Well, there are reasons, I won't go into that. But that is a good example of how kings are controlled and ruled over by merchants. Merchants are the most powerful thing on the earth today. And of course, merchants then rule Babylon. They control this present world, and through their Babylonian economics, of course, which God allows because it's brought on us as a punishment, they rule us physically. They tell us where to go and where to stop and where to go in and where to go out. Now, why do they keep taking our money from us? You ever see? I've established, at least in my own rationale, that they don't need our money. But you know, what they need is to prevent us from ever becoming independent. I'm convinced that the War of Independence, or the Revolutionary War that was fought back in 1776 by our forefathers, was a war to establish independence from the merchants. From the merchants. Now, we think we were getting away from England. That's not true. We brought a lot of England here with us. We were made from England, largely. We weren't getting away from England. What were we getting away from? The merchants and the laws of the merchants. We established a law here that was free of the merchants, but didn't take too long before they found their way back in. And unfortunately, now they have a death grip on us, and short of the grace of God, it would be fatal. So the money supply must be kept low enough amongst you and I, the citizens of this land, to keep us dependent upon the merchants. If they ever let the money supply get out of hand and we get enough money to trade with one another, then they've lost their control and we become independent again, and Babylon would have to start all over to reconquer us again. Now, today we have to borrow to keep in business. We have to borrow money to build a house. There's not probably five people in this room that could build a house without borrowing money to build it, unless you did it stick by stick and it took you 10 years. Nothing wrong with that either, but sometimes we just can't do that. But do you realize that when we go to the banks and we say, we need $50,000 to build a house, and they loan it to you at interest, do you realize that you're buying a license? You ever thought of it that way? They don't need your interest, really, but they do want to control you. And so you sign a thing and you give them jurisdiction over your enterprise, you might say, and so you give them control. And they also take your excess profits in the form of a tax called interest. Interest isn't actually a tax. It's a tax which then grants you a privilege to trade with one another. And so it's their way of keeping us broke, and by keeping us broke, they keep us controlled. Now that's the way Babylon functions. Now we're commanded to come out of Babylon, and there's a lot of good reasons to come out of Babylon. I've thought of a few here. Number one, we should come out of Babylon because God tells us to. In verse 4 in Revelation 18, it says, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues." You don't want the plagues that are going to come when Babylon falls, then you better get out. Second reason, second motive to come out of Babylon, to repulse evil. In Ephesians 5, starting in verse 11, it says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. It's interesting that he kind of parallels the coming out of Babylon, the waking up, with awakening from death, rising from death. So that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. If we're ever to do any kind of a battle with Babylon that's going to be successful, we're going to have to do it from a position of being wise. We can't do it ignorantly. We have lost enough battles due to ignorance. We need to get wise, we need to do it quick. Another reason that we need to come out of Babylon is so we can help bring Babylon down. We can help participate in the overthrow of Babylon. I don't know about you, but nothing would give me greater satisfaction than to think that I struck some kind of a blow that brought blood in Babylon. Boy, that'd be a fulfilling thing to think that I managed that. Revelation 18, starting in verse 4, says, I'll reread this. And I heard another voice saying, "Come out of Babylon," saying, "Come out of her, my people, and that ye be not partakers of her sins, that ye receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached into heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, in the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double." What does that mean? It means pay her back. If she struck you once, strike her twice. This isn't simply revenge. It's actually doing the bidding of our Lord. He wants us to do battle with Babylon, and we should try to do it wisely. So, and the final thing that I thought of here is that when we come out of Babylon, here's a real big incentive to come out of Babylon, and that is so that when Babylon falls, she doesn't fall on us. See, we could get crushed in Babylon's fall if we're not somewhere else when she falls. Now, I don't mean somewhere else physically necessarily, but we better figure out how to escape Babylon, because when she's going to fall, and when she does, I don't want to be there. In chapter 18, again in verse 8, it says, "Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judgeth her." One more scripture that I want to read to you. This has to do with learning how to recognize Babylon, because when we leave Babylon, we want to leave in the right direction. Hebrews chapter 5, starting in verse 11. This is speaking of the gospel and Jesus Christ. It says, "Of whom we have many things to say, and hard to be uttered, seeing that ye are dull of hearing. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk, and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even of those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." That's what we have to do. Exercise our senses so that we can discern both good and evil. Chapter 6, verse 1 says, "Therefore, leaving the principles of the doctrine of Christ, let us go on into perfection." That's the same thing as being full of age. If we looked at that and read it in the original writing, we'd find that those two terms are the same. Being full of age means being mature, and being going into perfection means going into maturity. That's how we come out of Babylon. That's how we come out of confusion. Become mature. Well, if I haven't convinced you to come out of Babylon already, then the next speaker I'm sure will. So I'll stop now and give somebody else a chance. Thank you.